what do you think about him giving OKC the first crack? Like, you could read that as saying he's going to try to, like, just square with them and say he's out. Or you could say it's like, I'm firming up my relationship with them before I go into these meetings. Like, do you read anything into that?
Yes. If I were OKC, I would want the last crack, not the first crack. Just because I would be pretty panicked about putting him in a room with guys like Steve Kerr, guys like Pat Riley, Greg Popovich. I mean, all that. It's tough to turn some of those guys down. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, fresh out of the jury box, Ben Golliver.
Hey, Andrew, how's it going?
What's up, man? You had jury duty the last few days, right?
Yeah, I gotta admit, I'm a changed person.
Talk to me about our legal system.
Well, have you ever done jury duty before?
I haven't.
Okay, well, they start you off with this training video, and it's like trying to kind of motivate you and pump you up and make you kind of feel like you're a real part of like a community and country and so forth.
Yeah, and you're a part of justice.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know me, like I'm ready, willing, and able to hop on my high horse basically at any given moment. You know, I'm out here kind of demanding Ayesha Curry apologize for a tweet. I'm holding Steph Curry accountable when no one else does.
Ben, you're a full-on Warriors truther at this point.
And I also might be a professional juror. I mean, I feel like I might be just from that mold. I've watched both the ESPN and the other O.J. Simpson documentaries. I've read most of the O.J. Simpson book. I mean, I felt like I was going in fully prepared.
Yeah, the O.J. documentary is how I spent my, like, 4 or 5 days away from basketball recently. I had a lot of fun binging on that late night. I'd actually watched the first half until like 4 a.m. During the finals and then finished it off a few days ago, which is great.
So good. So I'm going in there. I'm ready. And I watch this video and it says, you know, you're going to make sort of lasting friendships with your fellow jurors. And, you know, you're kind of skeptical about it.
lasting friendships? What?
Yeah, like they just like, well, that's what they say is that it's such an emotional experience and it ties everyone together that you're going to sort of be linked with these people for the rest of your life. And obviously I'm dubious, right?
Yeah, maybe if you're getting into the OJ trial, sure.
Oh, I got to say, though, it's true, man. I mean, can you tell me that you've ever held another man's fate in your palm?
I haven't. And I'm okay with that. I really don't need that kind of responsibility in my life.
I had to put a man to death yesterday, Andrew.
No, you didn't.
Okay, you're right. Actually, I just sat in a room for 6 hours and that was it. But
and then you told them that you thought Steph Curry should be jailed after the finals. And they were like, all right, this guy is not mentally stable. He can go.
Not only did I not get selected for a jury, I got like a 2-hour lunch break. I had to wake up at 7:30 in the morning. Did literally nothing. It reminded me, honestly, of freshman year in high school because it was like 7 hours long. We got out at 2:30. We had a 2-hour lunch break. We accomplished nothing. We just sat in a room and didn't talk to anyone. I didn't make a single lasting friendship. I didn't talk to another human being. And basically all I got out of it was my name mispronounced twice in public.
How do you mispronounce Golliver?
Well, there's Golliver, and the lady didn't even say Benjamin right. Like, she got the wrong syllable accented. So, honestly, all my preparation just went for naught. It was kind of a big bust.
Have you gotten sick of Gulliver's Travels jokes over the years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
gotten your fair share.
My dad's traveled more than I did, so he's gotten a lot more of that. Oh, by the way, speaking of him and speaking of Gulliver's Travels, do you know my dad made the New York Times? I kind of need to brag about this.
Okay, well, for what?
No, this is actually true. The whole thing about being, you know, killing someone in jury duty, I didn't do that.
Okay.
It's the most first world problem ever. So he's complaining about how long the TSA pre-check application process takes and how difficult it is to apply for TSA pre-check. So that's like, he got a New York Times for that. I think that's like, it's the most first world problem that's fit to print.
Yeah, good for him. That's, he's the concerned citizen speaking up for all of us. Do you have pre-check?
Oh, of course. Gotta have pre-check.
Yeah, I don't. I feel pretty inferior. I don't.
All right, this call's over. this call's over. Sorry, I can't do this anymore. Sorry, I've been trying, Andrew. I've been trying to carry you all these months, but...
Well, if this little 3-minute interlude has not turned everyone off the pod, it's time to talk free agency. I'm glad you got free of jury duty and your civic responsibilities, because we got to talk about Kevin Durant, man. 3 years in, we're finally here.
I'm so excited. And also, they said the average trial was 5 to 7 days. So I'm sitting there on June 28th, like, holy bleep, you know, 5 to 7 days. Kevin's going to have like 19 meetings during that time period. I'm just going to be sitting in a dark room trying to decide whether this guy who like publicly urinated needs to go get the needle. But it didn't come to that. Have you seen the order of his meetings, though? I think we should talk about that in all seriousness.
I have not.
Okay.
I just know that the Wizards are not on the list, and this podcast is dedicated in loving memory to 2.5 years of KDDDC conspiracy theories, which all died unceremoniously this past week.
There's going to be a lot of those KD to DC vote KD t-shirts going to Africa, aren't there?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Pretty bad. Yeah, I want to talk about KD to DC for a little bit. Was it all a joke to you coming from an outsider's perspective?
As soon as Beal went down right off the bat, it was over to me. I thought that there was a chance, if they had really built on the success from last year, if Wall had come out and had the type of like, hey, I'm a top three point guard, screw you guys for overlooking me type of season, and really built off the kind of gutsy playoff performance they had the previous year. And then they had really, you know, all of a sudden Otto Porter takes a step forward. All the other role players kind of get in line and they have sort of this transformative season where it's like, oh, we weren't just Paul Pierce, you know, dangling his junk in the Raptors' face. Like, we're a real squad. I think that had the potential to be a destination. But I also go back to that HBO movie that KD made about the offseason where he was like driving around Maryland. And it's like he just kind of had the vibe like, yeah, it's nice to visit, but I wouldn't really want to live here because there's just such a hassle about life and everybody kind of coming at you every direction. So I was always a little bit skeptical. And then once Beal went down right off the bat, I was like, that's done.
Yeah. That's what, I mean, it's been dead to me since probably like January, when it was clear the Wizards season was not going to turn around. But it's tough because people from the outside look at Wizards fans as if they like equal parts insane and naive for thinking that this was ever a possibility. And for a long time, this was real. I don't know. I may be crazy and too close to it, but, for me, the Durant to the Wizards stuff made sense from a basketball standpoint, which is the same reason LeBron went back to Cleveland. I mean, like the hometown return and the narrative and everything else made sense. And that was like a bonus, but there's no way he would have ever gone back if it wasn't a great basketball situation. And he saw all kinds of potential that ultimately became more complicated over the past 2 years. But it made sense from a basketball standpoint. And the same is true. It was true for a little while there. The Wizards looked like one of the like true up and coming teams in the East with John Wall, a point guard who would have been perfect to play alongside Durant. And it's sort of it, almost the opposite of Westbrook, where like the fit has never really worked. Like Wall feeding Durant 30 times a night would have been pretty incredible. But all of this sounds so pathetic in hindsight, because really, I think the two biggest things that worked against them were, one, bringing back Randy Whitman for an extra 2 years. This all started when Durant was in Vegas 2 years ago, openly talking about the Wizards and how great their young core was, specifically Wall and Beal. And they've just never been able to build on that and like take a step forward. And then, like you said, so in addition, and that was largely because they brought back Whitman and kept making the same stupid mistakes for the ensuing 2 years after that. And then the other part of it was that once it became clear that Bradley Beal, it wasn't just like a fluke the first 2 years with injuries, like he couldn't stay on the court this year, and that cost them a playoff spot, number one, and also made them a lot less attractive from a basketball standpoint, because it now looks less and less like the Wizards have two all-star cornerstones. So that's an issue. So I can't really blame Durant for writing them off. I think not taking a meeting was a pretty tough message to send, and certainly leaves the Wizards looking pretty bad next to the rest of the league. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think you summarized it brilliantly and thoroughly and exhaustively. I mean, remember, these guys are weighing everything, right? Wizards ownership. I mean, the guy's online arguing with bloggers, you know, it's not like this A-list owner. Management is basically a joke. Coach was a joke for the last couple of years, and they go in and get Brooks. And I know you were.
Scott Brooks kind of sealed the deal that Durant was out on the Wizards.
Yeah. And then, so the only thing that was going to save them was this overwhelmingly amazing roster, and it just didn't come together. And I'm not ready to write off Bradley Beal as like a potential superstar. Like, I think he could still be an all-star type player, but you needed him to be that guy, not necessarily a superstar, but like a solidified all-star or fringe all-star candidate in the East, so that you could have him as a central part of your pitch. And once that wasn't there, the whole pitch just became so weak, and all these other weaknesses kind of, became heightened. So I don't think that makes...
he needed to be at like DeRozan level and just wasn't the last 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes Wizards fans like delusional or those other words that you were talking about, though. I don't know if I really hold that against them. I mean, hope is a good thing. Hope springs eternal.
This is great. Thank you.
I mean, how often are you going to get a shot at the hometown kid who's going to be that good? Like, when was the last time there was a player from the DMV who was as good as Kevin Durant? Like, what? I mean, yeah. I don't even know who it would be. So if you can't get excited about that, what's the point?
Uncommonly sympathetic Golliver. You would make a good juror. I totally agree. And that's the only part that has bugged me a little bit, is that people have turned around and made it seem like Wizards fans were crazy this entire time. But like, given the roster that they had, there was just a gaping hole for a monster wing who could come and play next to John Wall. And it made a lot of sense. The one thing that was working against them the whole time is that it never totally made sense for Durant to want to come home and basically do exactly what LeBron did. Like, I don't blame him for wanting to sort of blaze his own trail. But from a basketball standpoint, the fit looked like it could be great for a little while there.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the other thing that I forgot to mention was there was the Eastern Conference factor, which was definitely playing in their favor. And that goes back to the whole Wall Beal taking the next step thing that I mentioned earlier, because if they were solidified as that number two team in the East this year, where like they look like that could potentially be who they would be like as a ceiling last year, if they had achieved that and all of a sudden it's now setting up this Titanic like Cavaliers versus Wizards for the next 5 years in the East, like that sounds pretty appealing if I'm Kevin Durant. It sounds better than trying to fight through the West muck. You know, that's a pretty solid base. But instead, they're just another team with these stranded superstars, like I always go back to. I mean, Wall's a stranded superstar right now.
It's tough. The Wizards now feel like real, real solidly mediocre. Like they're a step above the Orlando Magic, but they're equally irrelevant in terms of the broader NBA discourse.
At least they don't just bleed talent every direction, though. I mean, Hennigan is just unbelievable. Just hands out players like party favors. I always say that, but he's doing it again. Yeah. He's doing it again.
Well, so, all right. So with the Wizards situation got dark. That's how free agency started for me. And now, I mean, as I look at this, what's craziest about this year's free agency is that so many of us just truly have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, like, do you even feel comfortable like making predictions?
A little bit. I mean, I tend to defer. I mean, I try to hone in on the guys who I think need a change of scenery most. And then I think a lot of the other big guys, you know, they just tend to stay in position. So, you know, for a guy like Durant, I'm kind of in the camp that says I think he's going to stay in Oklahoma City. But going back real quick to the order of his meetings, I want to know if you read anything into this. So he's going to meet with the Thunder first before free agency. Then he's gonna meet with the Warriors on Friday and then the Spurs on Saturday, and he's holding them apparently in the Hamptons, according to I think.
It sounds like a delightful weekend with Roc Nation Sports.
Yeah, so hopefully he's got a helicopter out to wherever he's going, because it's the 4th of July, so that could be traffic issues, I heard. But what do you think about him giving OKC the first crack? Like, you could read that as saying he's going to try to, like, just square with them and say he's out. Or you could say it's like, I'm firming up my relationship with them before I go into these meetings. Like, do you read anything into that?
Yes. If I were OKC, I would want the last crack, not the first crack. Just because I would be pretty panicked about putting him in a room with guys like Steve Kerr, guys like Pat Riley, Greg Popovich. I mean, all that. It's tough to turn some of those guys down. So if I were Sam Presti, I would be excited to meet on June 30th or whenever they're going to meet. And then I would also make sure to book a couple extra days in the Hamptons to stick around and see if I could get an audience with him after all that stuff goes down.
So if Pat Riley pulls his rings out on the table and just shows them to you, what's your reaction?
I mean, I would love it. I love that has become his trademark. I don't know if he's done that more than once, but it's certainly a great piece of NBA lore with him and LeBron. And that was also, I'm pretty sure that meeting happened in the middle of the season in 2010. And it was the same night that he and Dwayne Wade convinced LeBron that he needed to change his number. And remember, LeBron came out the next day out of nowhere and was like, out of respect for Michael Jordan, I'm changing my number to number 6. And everybody was like, all right, cool. And little did we know that part of NBA history had shifted the night before.
So, but you know, I mean, really, how would you respond if he did that? Like, would you just immediately do whatever he told you to do? Like, where would the line be? Like, how influential and sort of opinion changing would that power play be?
Honestly, Pat Riley, I would rather play for someone like Steve Kerr than Pat Riley. Pat Riley always has come off as a little bit too intense, and I just wouldn't feel like I could totally trust Pat Riley, given his history. He's just what he did with the Knicks in the mid 90s it's forgotten just how shady and devious and brilliant it was, and more power to him. But like, I would love to work with Danny Ainge or Steve Kerr, some guys who I can actually sort of like rely on.
Well, so that's my point here, is if he can't convince you with the rings, why should we believe he's this incredible pitch man who's going to be able to convince Kevin Durant?
No, you know what? We should save the Durant stuff for the end. But I totally, I'm out on the idea that Riley all by himself can circumvent like serious cap issues in Miami and convince KD to tie his future up with Dwayne Wade's like aging knees and Hassan Whiteside and what's left of Goran Dragic.
Okay, good. Cause I'm selling on that idea too.
Yeah, I'm out. But all right. So I have some other free agency questions for you. And then we can really dive deep into Durant and how little we know towards the end. But right now I'm thinking strictly as a Wizards fan, staring down the barrel of some really, really dark consolation prizes in the summer of KD. So some of the other guys who may get maxed out this summer are Chandler Parsons, Dwight Howard, maybe not the max, but like max-ish type money, Harrison Barnes, Nick Batum, Ryan Anderson, and Joakim Noah. That was a rumor just as I was headed on vacation for 4 or 5 days. I saw that the Wizards were about to max out Joakim Noah or were rumored to be talking about it. And that was a real sign that I needed to just like put down my cell phone for the next 4 or 5 days, because it was not, the news was not going to get better from there. So what do you think though? Like, for some of these teams that aren't in the mix for max guys, like do you think they should roll the dice on some of these other free agents?
Well, you listed off a whole bunch of players who I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. Starting
right?
Starting with Noah. I mean, he obviously had a terrible season. He's not going to be as bad as he was last year. Injuries intervened.
I think Noah can help a good team.
I'm pretty dubious. I just did this big breakdown of the center position, and he has so many holes in his game in terms of what people are looking for. And offensively, he's so hard to work around that you have to just have like ideal spacing around him to kind of make it work. And yeah. For a team like the Wizards, like, I don't see that happening at all. Oh, I mean, yeah. You basically don't have to guard him, and he tries to make up with it, the passing and playmaking. And he's like way, way high on the list in terms of like assists for a player at his height and his position. But I just think he's unfortunately almost heading down not exactly the same track as Roy Hibbert, but sort of that dinosaur type track where it's so hard to kind of make it work. And his amazing contributions aren't quite as amazing as they once were, that now you're just compromising your entire kind of framework to fit him in. And then is it really worth it?
I look at him more in an Andrew Bogut type mold where he can definitely help a team, but he can't play big minutes. And I'm worried about whichever team. I certainly hope it's not the Wizards. Like, if you have to overpay Noah just for the chance to play him 15 or 20 minutes a game, it's not gonna end well. Like, that's not an investment the team should be making in 2016. However, if you can get him for maybe like $7 or $8 million for the next 2 years, and you're a playoff team, like, I think he could definitely play some valuable minutes for a Golden State or the Spurs or basically any kind of smart team, even the Celtics. Like, put him in the mix for a little while just playing stretches. I think he still has a lot left in terms of someone who can help run the offense out of the high post.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'll put it this way.
Giving up on Noah.
I'd give Dwight Howard the full max, 4 years, however much money that is, you know, $100+ million, before I would give Noah, like, if we're saying starters money right now is like $15 million, before I'd give him like $16 or $17 million a year. I'd just rather max out Dwight.
Yeah, I agree. I think Noah really only makes sense if he's taking a discount to go help a title contender. And Howard, so then what do you think of Dwight? Because I could see him making sense in a couple of these situations. Like, if the Hawks lose Al Horford, maybe an ATL homecoming makes sense for Dwight.
Yeah, I've heard some buzz on that for a while, probably dating back even to the All-Star break. Because remember, he was kind of like quietly on the trade market there for a little bit. And I had heard some whispers about, you know, Atlanta's kind of poking around. So I could see him working with Horford, without Horford, with, you know, a Millsap Howard frontline in the Eastern Conference, I think would be really, really amazing. So if they did lose Horford, you know, I think that would be a nice spot for him. Let me just say up front, I think both Horford and Mike Conley should leave their current situations. Like, I think they need to balance. I understand the whole 5 year, like $130+ million or whatever, maybe even more, is going to be incredibly tempting for both of them. But I think they both need to find better situations where they can actually win.
Are you worried about Marc Gasol's feet? Is that why you say that?
I'm just worried about their whole core. I mean, they have so many core pieces who are past their prime. They tried to get out in front of it with some proactive trades at the deadline, which is fine. Those guys haven't been turned into impact makers yet. Mike Conley needs to win now. The Grizzlies' time has kind of come. They still don't have enough shooting. We've been saying that for 7 or 8 years. And I just think when you look at the Western Conference's hierarchy, there's no way they're ever going to crack higher than fourth. And even fourth is tricky if we give the Clippers their core back. So I just think it's time to move on. I mean, I understand Marc Gasol is a big-time impact player, top 25 type guy when he's healthy. And I know Mike Conley's a super loyal guy, probably wants to stay there.
I think he's better than top 25.
Okay, so top 15. I mean, whatever you want to give him, but he's not going to beat the Thunder, Spurs, or Warriors by himself, and it's not going to do it with Mike Conley either.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they're definitely not in the title mix with just those two. But then
if I was Mike Conley, I'd be trying to get to the Spurs any possible way I could.
Did you see the note from Mark Stein that the rumors of Conley interest in San Antonio were overblown?
Well, that's fine. I'm just saying from a
I don't understand it.
Yeah. No, go for it. Like, Tony is not washed, but he's getting there. He's like damp in the laundromat, like about to be washed.
I also think that Manu is
thoroughly washed.
Tony would be great if he didn't have to play 35 minutes a night. And I mean, this is now year 6 or 7 in a row where he's been like the catalyst for their offense in the fourth quarter. And if he didn't have quite that much responsibility, you could probably get a few more useful years out of him.
I just like the idea of having their defensive core, Kawhi, Mike Conley, LaMarcus.
Oh, it would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice, like, that's a really elite defense. So that's going to continue forward. And they just need a little, and they need the next generation to kind of come together. So if you're the Spurs, it makes all the sense in the world. But they're, you know, that stuff being tamped down is probably happening because, you know, the indications are, it seems like Conley wants to re-sign to Memphis. I mean, Justin Timberlake did do a viral video for him. That's pretty hard to turn down. Especially
if you're
Mike
Conley.
I didn't click
on that video.
Yeah, well, I watched like 7 seconds of it. Remember you told me like no video can, you know, 15 seconds is like your max that you can watch a YouTube or whatever. I gave it about half of that and it was fine.
Well, it was also like, it was a team official video, and those videos generally have like pre-roll ads. So in my infinite laziness, I was just like, nah, I don't have 15 seconds to sit through an ad for Justin Timberlake's sonnet to Mike Conley.
I bet Mike Conley had enough time for it, though.
Yeah, well, good. I would like to see Mike Conley leave as well, solely because I think it makes the rest of the rest of free agency a lot more interesting. I mean, he and Horford both are guys who could then attract other pieces, be it via trade and making destinations more attractive, or If Horford goes to Boston, they suddenly are like really one player away.
Now we're talking. I mean, that and Horford, when I was going through the big man, like, he really passes every test. I mean, that dude does a lot of really, really interesting stuff. He's like one of the best two-way impact guys on the free agency market. He's the best three-point shooter among the centers. He's a great ball handler, low turnover guy for how often he has the ball in his hands. He's unselfish, but he can score. He's a finisher. He's among the top centers and dunks in this class. I mean, just every little thing that you want from a player, Horford gives it to you. And so why do you want to hang out in Atlanta if you're him? Find a better spot. I mean, those guys are not going to get past LeBron ever. I mean, LeBron will be 47 years old. Those guys are going down in the second round in 5 games.
The poor Hawks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's enough uncertainty with the rest of the roster to where it may make the most sense for the Hawks to start to turn things over a little bit and reboot over the next 2 years or so. What about Horford? The other possibility that I really like for Horford is Golden State.
Well, I mean, that'd be a ridiculous, like, embarrassment of riches perfect fit. But yeah, I mean, that would be fantastic for them. And I think if you do that, you can trade Bogut and you can get off Azili, and you know, you're in a better spot than you were. So I mean, they would rush to do that. I mean, that'd be a ridiculous
question. Then is
addition.
The wing. The question then is the wing. Could they keep Harrison Barnes in that scenario?
That would get pretty dicey. I mean, they're giving Horford a full max. I think that'd be pretty tricky.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you're a Warriors fan, you would want, certainly, like, you could give the max to Horford for 2 or 3 years, but a full max, like, I don't think he's gonna be at the same level 3 years from now.
Yeah, but I think talking to a couple executives about that issue, they always stress to me, like, worry about that later, you know? Like, there's always a way to just dump that final year of that contract. So if you really think a guy is going to give you 3 good years, like, don't worry about the fourth year, because, you know, you could easily win a title in those 3 years. Or if you're the Warriors, you could win 3 titles in those 3 years. And then who cares if you're paying them, you know, the extra 27 on the back end. So that's the kind of perverted logic or justifications that sometimes you hear from people who are in these situations handing the money out. But like, if the difference is we get Al Horford or we don't, is it worth paying that 25% premium if you're a team like the Warriors or another team, say even the Spurs, you know, depending on what happened with like Tim Duncan or whatever, where you're sort of ready to win now, you need that impact guy, or even the Celtics. I mean, I think the premium price is worth paying, right?
Yeah, I think if you're the Celtics, Horford gets you so close that you just have to do whatever it takes, especially after Danny Ainge has had like this existential crisis at the draft. And really, it's been like 2 or 3 years of Danny Ainge as Sisyphus with all these draft picks. And he keeps falling back down the mountain. And I think if Horford's willing to listen, I mean, the Celtics definitely become like the clear number two in the East if they could land him.
I mean, make it happen. Anything besides the Hawks. I think he needs to change scenery. I'm not sure if he will. It's so tricky when, you know, you're used to being compensated like, you know, 10, 11, 12 million a year. And all of a sudden that number's doubling and, you know, you're looking over 5 years and it's the same team. It's like, that's really hard to say no to. I get that. But I mean, do you want to be great? I guess that's the question for Al Horford is, do you want to be great or do you want to just cash checks?
I love when you come with the ultimatums for guys. But yeah, salary stuff.
I'm not being unfair, though. If he goes back to Atlanta, what's their ceiling next year? Tell me their best case scenario for this summer. They keep Bazemore. They keep Horford. What's their best case?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I think he could leave. And the salary stuff also cuts both ways because all these guys are seeing such a dramatic jump in salary that leaving money on the table that teams like the Grizz can offer more, although the Grizz being able to guarantee a fifth year at full max is a lot to turn down if you're Mike Conley, because by that point he will be pretty washed up as well, or likely declining anyways, and so that's a lot of money to leave behind. But either way, the salary jumps are so dramatic that it may not hurt as much for some of these guys to leave their teams because they're already going to be getting an $8 or $9 million raise.
What about Horford to Miami?
Ooh, as a Whiteside replacement?
There you go.
I like it. And that's another question I have is what do the Heat do?
I mean, if I'm the Heat, I would send Whiteside out and bring Horford in a heartbeat. The fit with Bosch.
Did you see the Whiteside DMs?
Yeah, that wasn't real though. Come on, man.
You know what?
No, it was proven fake. I think Snopes got onto it.
I don't know. If there's one player at the NBA who would unwittingly tip his hand via DM to a Twitter model, it would definitely be Hassan Whiteside. And I felt like that night people were too quick to write it off as fake. That's all I'll say.
Look, I understand you want to believe. Like, there were some kids in my preschool who wanted to believe in Santa, and I just come through with the truth. It's not.
I
want to
believe
real.
In Hassan Whiteside's DMs.
Yeah, no, I wanted to believe too. I mean, it's hilarious. It was a brilliantly done troll job, but no.
I do believe. I 100% believe that is how like NBA players work game in DMs. Like, oh, this is me and DJ Khaled. Enough said.
that's the closing move, right?
Like every NBA player's game is so much worse than you would imagine, and that's why it felt real. So whoever, if anyone was faking it, shout out to you for the verisimilitude.
So real. So that would be another guy. Like if I were Miami, I'd do that in a heartbeat. I think he fits with their timeline really well too, you know, 30s. You know, that's pretty solid. You mentioned Ryan Anderson earlier, right?
Yes.
I would not pay him a dollar.
So I'm trying not to freak out as the Wizards consider paying Ryan Anderson. Because I think he's probably going to cost probably 18 a year or something. I mean, somewhere in that range. And like the idea of Ryan Anderson is maybe worth that, but Ryan Anderson hasn't been that player since like 2012.
Yeah, 100%. And his defense has really, really gotten bad. I think you're going to get saved by the Kings on that one. Like I keep hearing this buzz that they're going to sign the hometown kid, and Vlade has fully wrapped his mind around the idea that every Eastern European player is his. Like, he's gotten that. I think that they can also communicate to him that he's allowed to, like, take the Central California guys too. And if they can get over that speed bump, I think you're going to see just a ludicrous Kings offer for Ryan Anderson, which he's going to just take and cash and live in California and be good.
It makes no sense. I'll be happy for him if he gets that money. I don't know, man. I mean, you look at Ryan Anderson. I don't think you can keep him on the court in the fourth quarter of some of these playoff games. In of most of these playoff games.
Well, that shouldn't be a concern for the Kings.
No, it shouldn't. You're right. That's fair enough. What about the other guy? Broader question here. What player will sign the most regrettable $20 million a year contract this summer?
Oh, that's... I think that's the Harrison Barnes Memorial tag.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
So you're not in on Barnes to the Sixers?
Well, I mean, I think that that's a logical landing place for him. And I saw Allen Crabbe maybe to the Sixers. I mean, with their needs, that's what they're going to be doing, is just going after all these restricted free agents and just trying to overpay and snare one of them. But if you're talking about getting up to $20 million a year, I mean, another guy I'd put in that category is Nicholas Batum, and I'd also maybe put Chandler Parsons. I think those guys, they're good, but those guys are kind of like quietly could be killers. You know, if they fall off a little bit and they're just like sitting on your books, eating up almost a quarter of your cap, and, you know, they're third options, but not anything really better than that. I think those guys can, you know, do a lot of damage and be pretty regrettable.
Interesting. Okay. I am with you on Batum. I feel like Batum became a darling of NBA Twitter this year and had a great year in Charlotte, but I also, it's sort of an outlier when you look at the last few years of his career. And I just would worry. I think it makes sense for the Hornets to try and keep that team together, but he'll be making what, $25 million a year?
Yeah, I mean, that's in play, and that's the kind of number where I'm just like, he's not that guy.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And I like Barnes to the Sixers. I think it's pretty anticlimactic for after 3 years of hoarding cap space and assets for like the big splash of Sam Hinkie's big power move. It ends with Harrison Barnes, and they still have to trade Jahlil and Nerlens, and so it's a pretty depressing commentary on the process and where all this leads. But I think if you're the Sixers, you're gonna have to overpay to get guys that are just decent, and then you can sort of work from there. And they got Ben Simmons, and they have all kinds of draft picks in the future. So overpaying for a little bit of stability is not a bad idea.
Yeah, and I mean, they've been struggling to even get to the salary floor for a few seasons, right? So I don't think that hammering the Sixers for like overpaying, it's like at least they're trying. You know, at least they're spending money somewhere. I don't think it matters that much. You want to find the right balance. You know, that's going to be a process, but you need to get talent. I mean, they need a gigantic talent upgrade. I mean, they have won barely any games the last 3 years for a reason. Their players suck. So if you can get a guy who sucks by Warriors standards, but, you know, by NBA standards, he's like not horrible, that's a gigantic upgrade.
Yeah. Well, and I also just think it puts them on on more solid footing to do business over the next few years. And the other thing, if I were a Sixers fan, I would desperately want a point guard. And it's been a couple years since they've had someone decent, and I don't really know what the options are for them. I know there was talk of a Nerlens for Patrick Beverley and Trevor Ariza trade, and I would do that trade if I were the Sixers, just to get some stability in there and then see what you have down the line, because I think they've also got Kings pick swaps in the near future, and so like they're still gonna have shots at the top of the lottery, but a veteran guy to help stabilize things would make a lot of sense as well.
Yeah, I mean, I if I'm them, I don't want a true point guard. I just want a spot up shooter, you know, off ball, because I want Simmons to handle the rock. And then I wouldn't trade Nerlens. I'd try to keep him and just move Jahlil as much as possible. And if that means taking back a substandard point guard, then I think that would be a compromise I'd be willing to make. Because you don't have to turn this thing into a 45-win team next season. You know, it's going to be a gradual development. So I'd just be looking for a hole plugger at that point guard spot. Somebody who can, you know, knock down an angle three if he's wide open.
Yeah, and I agree. If it's possible to trade Okafor and keep Nerlens, like, that's definitely the play. I'm just not sure how much value Okafor will have right now. But the issue with trading Nerlens is that then it becomes like you're all in on the health of Embiid, and I would give myself some options if I were the Colangelo family. But then the other player that we were talking about, Chandler Parsons, that's the dude who I would be most freaked out about in terms of giving max money to.
Yeah, he's injured Batum. So everything we've said about Batum times, you know, he's coming off a horrible knee injury, and he hasn't really been that great in a couple of years. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like the Mavs couldn't even play him for full games last year, and now we're talking about max money, and he had microfracture surgery. Like there's a chance that Parsons could sign a max deal and really just kind of like disappear over the next few years.
Yeah, for sure. I don't really know what the Mavericks to me are a giant wild card here, because I could see them trying to chase every single guy like they do every single summer, striking out over and over again. Hopefully, you know, none of their free agency pursuits end in hostage situations like last year. And, you know, they may end up just paying a ton to bring their guys back. And if that's how it goes, I don't know why we should expect them to be any better last year than they were last year.
Here's the thing. If I were the Mavs, I would be really gunning for Mike Conley and Hassan Whiteside. And then if that doesn't work, I would flip the switch and say, all right, we're going to tank this year. And hopefully Dirk is okay with that and on board with like the long-term plan. But I just, the 2017 draft has a lot of good options. There may not necessarily be like a Karl Towns, but like at some point the Mavs are going to have to sort of replenish the roster a little bit. And they gave their pick away to the Celtics this year, which was great. They ended up losing out on Gershon Yabusele. But I think next year there's enough talent to where, like, if there aren't realistic options that will allow you to sort of contend and be in that the top half of the West, they should just sort of reboot here.
Yeah, I thought they should have done that last year, and then they got off to that great start, and I had to basically, you know, eat crow or whatever, and then they fell apart and ended up right where I thought they would, which was, you know, first round and out, and it was like, oh yeah, I was right the whole time. They're overdue for that. I mean, their talent levels, I mean, Carlisle does an amazing job of getting guys like Felton to, you know, put things together on the court when you thought they were done 3 years ago. But I don't think they've got enough accumulated there, even if they bring their guys back. You know, if they strike out on these big names like you're talking about, I think that, you know, they have a pretty hard ceiling, and it's even lower than Memphis's hard ceiling.
Yeah. Well, and it would, for them to succeed, they would have to pull off the Whiteside coup early in free agency, because Mike Conley's not going to go there if it's just signing up to play with Dirk for the next 2 years before Dirk retires.
Hey, can we just take a moment to talk about how bad this free agency class is?
It's really bad. You know what my next question was?
Was that?
My next question is whether Alan Crabb will get the max.
He's not going to get a max, but he's going to get a ton. I would say...
he might get the max.
I don't think so.
All right. I don't know. I mean, I think he's one of the few guys that teams can look at and get really excited about. And that might be enough to drive up his price. When we're talking about the Nets, the Sixers, the Kings, like, these are teams that don't have a lot of better options. And like, I wouldn't feel bad about adding Alan Crabb to the rotation. I mean, like, he's a solid starting two guard who could potentially be better than he was in Portland last year.
And the single worst max player in NBA history. No, I think that Portland is ripe for getting poached. I mean, they've got three restricted free agents. They'd obviously, I think in an ideal world, they'd like to keep all three, but that's tricky. You know, it's going to get expensive. You know, Myers Leonard is basically the only stretch five on the market outside of Horford. And then you look at Harkless. You know, he was a pretty key piece for them, especially in the postseason. I'd be surprised if they let him go easily. So you get into the situation now where it's kind of hard to pay all these guys who you kind of turned into, or you developed into, you know, pretty solid rotation players. And do you want to spend, like, you know, what's it going to take? Like $45 million a year to keep all three of those guys? Like, you know, none of those guys were anything last year. So,
this is the rare year where restricted free agency is almost like real free agency, because some of these guys are going to get so overpaid that teams like the Blazers are just going to be like, well, listen, like, we like Alan Crabb, but we're not going to pay him $18 million a year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, if you're Portland, you have to decide, like, if you strike out on the big name guys, like, they want a center, obviously. So if they strike out on Dwight, Hassan Whiteside, and Horford, like we would all expect, like, isn't it a pretty decent backup plan to just overpay all your own guys to come back? I mean, they had an incredibly small payroll last year. Paul Allen's rich. They had a really good chemistry in locker room. Like, you could justify just paying all those guys and figuring it out down the road. But then, you know, you're not really taking a step forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. But I also, for me, I'm seeing so much of this through my, the lens as a Wizards fan. And I look at the market and I'm like, you know what? Maybe it makes sense to just sort of make some little moves, like you're talking about with the Blazers, is make some little moves around the fringes of the roster, bring the core back, and then wait things out and see what happens next summer or even in February with the trade deadline. Because, like, there's not a lot of options if you're looking to really, like, take a leap in free agency.
Okay, let's go outside of the top 15 and let's look at Rob's top 50 free agents that he's put together. And just tell me if you even want these guys on your team for the price that you know they're going to get, right? So let's just start with Biombo. Like, if he's going to get $18 million a year or whatever, do you want him on your team?
I mean, my team was reportedly considering maxing out Joakim Noah, so I would prefer Biombo to that, but no.
Okay, so then here's one guy I actually probably would want on my team, is Jan Mahimi. But it seems like he's been getting so much buzz as, like, under the radar, like, steel type guy that he might end up getting paid huge too. But I would definitely take him.
I think he's a solid option as, like, a placeholder.
So what if he starts to go for, like, 16 or 17 though?
I know, the placeholders are making John Wall money this summer. It's great.
So then we bring ourselves to Festus and Ryan Anderson, who I think both are pretty flawed. I mean, I'd want Festus. I don't think I would even want Ryan Anderson.
I would definitely take a chance with Festus, and he will make sense for some team as a gamble, because in November of last year, he looked great. He just sort of, his game fell apart as the season unfolded and the finals were pretty brutal. I mean, he's lucky that Harrison Barnes exists, because his game fell apart just as badly.
Okay, so what about maxing Evan Fournier?
Well, Evan Fournier is in the Alan Crabb category, where you're like, by the way, this, we've taken on free agency in the nerdiest way possible, breaking down Alan Crabb and
I tried to start us off with jury duty talk. Okay, that got shot down. So now we're going into the nuts and bolts of Evan Fournier and Alan Crabb, but we're not going that deep here, man. This is the top 25. I haven't even gotten outside the top 25 yet.
I know. Well, so Fournier is in the Crabb category, where you're like, this is an overpay, but this guy can still get better. He could, and we're excited to have him as part of the team. Like, I really think that both of those guys are gonna sort of take a little bit of a leap over the next few years. Crabb, especially. Fournier, we've been saying for the last two or three years, is gonna have a breakout season, and it just hasn't quite happened. But I wouldn't feel horrible, like, if the Wizards No, I don't want, I really don't want the Wizards to max out Evan Fournier, but I wouldn't feel like dread if that were the move that like the Wizards or somebody else made.
Okay, what about throwing $70 million at J.R. Smith?
Absolutely not. I think that's going to be like a Dan Gilbert special. I think that's the tax he has to pay for the title.
So that was the top 25. I mean, so we basically got to role players before we even really started. I mean,
there's also Steven Jackson's making a comeback. I would love to take Steven Jackson on a mid-level. Matt Barnes, there's Rajon Rondo. You've got a solid cast of crazy role players to choose from too.
Yeah, I guess my point, bigger picture here, is that how many teams do you think are going to have a transformative summer on the free agency market? Now, there could be trades to come. Obviously, that can throw a wrench into everything. But when we're looking at this, I mean, how many guys are really going to change your future? Can Dwight Howard change your team's future trajectory? I'm not sure. Obviously, Kevin Durant can. I think Al Horford could change the Celtics or a team like that. Mike Conley could potentially do that if you had a big hole at point guard. I don't even know if I put Hassan Whiteside in that category. And then past that, you have, you know, these third wheel guys like Batum and Parsons, who I definitely don't see really making a big change. I mean, Batum clearly boosted Charlotte last year, but he didn't put them into that like really tough to beat category in the Eastern Conference. I think DeRozan's going to stay in Toronto. So I think
we're talking about there's going to be four or five teams that take a step back as a result of free agency. And then there are going to be one or two teams that really make a little bit of a jump here. And that's a good segue into Durant, because I really think that he's the one guy who can change the landscape. Horford to a lesser degree, possibly with Boston giving us a little bit of a second contender in the East, but this is, it's all about Durant. So let's finish with KD.
I mean, do you think that we should maybe just preview Summer League instead? I mean, are we at that level?
I mean, look, I've spent the last few days watching OJ Simpson documentaries and rewatching Mr. Robot. So if you want to just talk about TV, like, I'm ready for the summer to be here.
Should we just break down the OJ? I got plenty of OJ takes.
I don't know. I think we'll save that for deeper in the summer. But yeah, man. So KD, it all gets real here. And what I like most about this is that this has been building for 2 years. And right now, if you talk to people, listen to people around the league, nobody knows what's going to happen. This is just like a complete crapshoot here.
I think there's an undercurrent that expects him to stay.
You think so?
I do.
Here's the thing. I think that was true maybe a month ago, but now that he's taking these meetings, I mean, all bets are off in my eyes and from some of the stuff that has been floating around. Really, as a fan, especially if the Wizards are out of it, I think I'd prefer him to stay rather than go to the Warriors stuff is much realer than I thought it would have been. Even if you'd asked me like 2 weeks ago, but it's like the Warriors are putting on the full court press. Have apparently been sort of, the players have been texting him all year. And I mean, I just can't imagine him really doing that.
So I guess, first of all, can we mention that the Lakers didn't get a meeting?
Yeah, the Lakers, after there was legitimate buzz. One day I'll have to share my Lakers scoop, my KD Lakers scoop on the pod. But there were like, as recently as February, people were like, hey, don't count out the Lakers. There was enough buzz to make it seem like there was something there that we'd all been missing. But now it makes sense. And honestly, I'm more excited to watch that young Lakers team than watch like Kevin Durant randomly choose the Lakers while the entire NBA freaks out.
Well, there was a great nugget in Kevin Ding's latest Lakers breakdown about how Dr. Jerry Buss, before his untimely death, used to brag when his son would actually show up in the office, and he'd like run around telling people, Jim's in the office. Jim's in the office. Do you think think Jim would show up to the meeting if invited, or do you think he'd just blow it off?
I think if you're the Lakers, you honestly tell Jim that the meeting is like the next day, and you just have to have the meeting without him. Just
it's in East Hampton, not West Hampton.
Yeah, exactly. You mix it up a little bit, and I think that's best for everyone involved.
Yeah, so poor Lakers. But that wasn't really going to happen. Don't you think the Ingram thing too? Like, if it wasn't already settled, like.
Oh yeah, no. The Lakers are in good shape, and if they can figure out the bus dynamic at the top, they like things are actually moving in the right direction, and they're fine right now. My question is, I mean, the Clippers would then would have to move Blake Griffin, but I like put KD in a lineup with Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan, particularly if the NBA changes the hack-a-shack rule this summer, and that's like. That is a legit counterpart to the Warriors and Cavs.
So I think the only team that has a chance besides the Thunder this summer is the Warriors. I think it's the Warriors. I can't make the case for the Clippers. It's just too hard to picture. Like, just close your eyes and try to picture KD in a Clippers jersey, and then open your eyes and look at the Clippers mascot.
That's a great point. That's a really good point.
It just doesn't pass the smell test, and it, you know, like the personalities, where are the connections, you know, whether it's, you know, DeAndre, Chris Paul, KD. I mean, you don't hear a lot. I mean, KD's not on the banana boat, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
that part kind of makes me wonder. The fit positionally in Golden State is just obscenely good, so I think that one makes a lot of sense in terms of how he would just kind of plug in.
On the other hand, though, I really enjoy the Warriors, and I may be one of the last remaining few who even through the finals I liked watching the Warriors, as they sort of became more heels of the NBA in that Thunder series especially, and then in the finals. But if Durant goes to Golden State, they are officially like team pure evil, and like Joe Lacob will be beating his chest this summer. And I mean, I don't think that would be like fun for the NBA, because A, they'll be so good that it's hard to imagine that team losing. And then B, like, I would rather root for Steph Curry to be great on his own than to do this with Durant. And I want Durant to win a title on his own.
I just don't want there to be stories where people are trying to break down whether they can be the first team to go undefeated through a regular season. Cause I think that's what we'd be looking at in terms of like the media response to it. And if this, I mean, let's be real, the 72-73 chase, like, that got really exhausting, right? I mean, it was nonstop for like 8 months. And do you really want to ramp that up again? I mean, immediately, that's starting on July 2, if he chooses the Warriors, you know what I mean? Like, that's the storybook for the next 12 months period. I think it'd be worse than the big three Heatles coming together. Yes. You know, I'd probably have to move to the Oakland suburbs. Like,
and there would be such a miserable discourse among like the basketball internet, because there would be people like me who look at this move and are like, this is just lame. And then there would be a whole other subset that say, listen, Kevin Durant's a grown man and is free to do whatever he wants. And I agree with that. Like, he's free to do whatever he wants, but that would just suck. Like, the him on the Warriors would not be fun.
Well, put it this way.
I reserve the right to take this back if like a week from now he really does go to Golden State. Like, maybe it'll change, but I don't know, man. And the Spurs is the same way.
I don't think the Spurs are quite the same way, because I think that would be more of a transition, right? Like, and you don't even know necessarily if he joined the Spurs, would they win more games next season than the Warriors? I mean, at that point, the Warriors would probably bring back the whole squad, because they would feel the pressure to do it.
Plus Horford or Powell or someone in the middle to take pressure off Steph.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it would be quite the same if you went to the Spurs. But here's the thing. You said you enjoyed rooting for the Warriors all the way through the end. If he goes back to the Thunder, will you be disappointed, or can you root for the Thunder too?
No, I would. love to root for the. I mean, that team, the Thunder is definitely a team that we will look back on 10 years from now and be like, man, that team was awesome. Whether they win a title or not, people will have really fond memories of OKC and everything that happened with KD and Russ. So if we get another year of that, like, I'm all in. Let's do it again. The other thing is, if they win a title, I think everyone who's watched basketball for the past 6 or 7 years would find it incredibly satisfying to watch them do it together and make it work. But the flip side of this free agency stuff is, even without all the options, even without any clear, obvious option that makes sense for him, if he's going to leave, don't you think it makes sense for him to leave this year?
I don't know. I could see the argument both ways. I mean, if he waits till next year, then he can at least try to atone for that choke job in the playoffs. He can say he gave it his all. He gets to the 10-year, threshold in terms of his career. So he's got the most possible money on the table if he wants to stay. I mean, I think, I don't know. I don't really feel like he's in a big rush out the door. I feel like Sam Presti's done a pretty nice job building things around him. I think he's at a good place with the fan base and the community. No obvious tension there. I think he handled this past year of all the rumors and stuff like incredibly professionally. Like, I don't even really think it was that big of a distraction. I think he could do it again if he wanted to. I think the biggest reason why you would do it this year is just if you decided, I don't want to do it again next year.
That's
I want to go
mean.
Somewhere and then just declare like, hey, I'm taking this short-term deal, but I'm going to stay with these guys for the next 5 years. And then you have to come up with a spot where that makes sense for that long. And how many of those spots are there besides the Warriors?
Yeah. Well, the Celtics could also make a lot of sense long-term, particularly if they get Horford.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm out on the Celtics rumor mongering until they do anything. I guess maybe
that's,
I'm scarred.
That's totally fair stance.
I did a podcast with someone in Boston right after the draft, which might have been a bad idea on my part because I did not quite realize how angry they were at Danny Ainge. Apparently, they were booing the owner to the point where it got really serious. So I didn't quite realize the intensity factor there. They're feeling a little burned by like 4 straight years of unfulfilled rumors. But this would be the biggest white whale that they haven't landed. And from that standpoint, I'm just going to say it's not going to happen because of that.
Yeah, things could get pretty angsty. And I also, the appeal of KD to the Celtics for me is that it would give the league like 4 real title contenders with Spurs and however they retool this summer, Warriors, Cavs, and Celtics. And like, that's all we really need as NBA fans. Like, give us that final four. And we can have fun with like nonsense throughout the rest of the league all year and then get like a classic ending in both conferences. The flip side of that is if Durant did go to the Celtics, it would take maybe 36 hours before the fans became so unbearable about it that everyone regretted it and wished he'd stayed in OKC.
Here's my underrated Durant scenario. I think the most likely scenario is he goes back to the Thunder on a 1+1 deal. I think the second most likely scenario is that he goes back to the Thunder on a full 5-year max. And then the third most likely scenario I would say is the Warriors.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The more we think about it, I would actually put 5-year max on par with the 1+1. And that would be awesome. Like, if KD stays in OKC for the next few years, like that would be a lot of fun and great for the league.
Yeah. So the downside to that is that he's leaving a lot of money on the table because his starting salary next year after 10 years would be so much higher. I mean, the upside would just be that he's locked in. He sends a message to Westbrook like, yo, I'm in. If you want to be in, you know, stay here and do it with me. He gives them complete stability for the next however long they want in terms of building the team around them. They're right in the middle of a title window. I think that would also send a message to Adams like, yo, you're a max player, but, you know, if you sacrifice a little bit here to stay with me, you know, don't take the full max, then we have even more flexibility. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
Steven
just
Adams, you're a god in Oklahoma City. Why would you ever leave?
Bingo. Yeah, exactly. Like, join the Oklahoma City Hall of Fame in like 3 years because Katie's already
yeah,
in it.
The Oklahoma Hall of Fame. I forgot about that. That was a great move from the Thunder. There's so many things over the past few years that have been building to this week.
Do you take him out of the Oklahoma Hall of Fame if he leaves?
I don't think so. I think that's a lifetime achievement. And I think the people of Oklahoma will ultimately soften and still appreciate KD for everything he did. Although it could get pretty ugly for the next few weeks. But yeah, man, this last 10, 15 minutes is proof that we really have no idea. The Thunder have the edge, but like, it could go so many different directions from here for both Kevin Durant and Allen Crabbe.
Yeah, and Fournier and Chandler Parsons and all these other third-tier guys who...
And the Wizards. The Wizards are the only team that really... There's not much of a happy ending until the season starts and okay. We get to watch John Wall again.
Who is your realistic dream target for the Wizards? Like, if you can nail one player and just say, yeah, we got him for, like, a market deal, who is it?
I'm all set. my dream is for them to just not make any like egregious commitment to someone who doesn't deserve it. So that's like Parsons. I saw some odds that Parsons was at the top of their list. Batum would be fine, but like another contract that's not really going to age very well. So my dream is to just do nothing. Please don't try to save face after the Durant embarrassment.
So nothing is better than something. I think that is the official motto of 2016 free agency. I think that's a wrap.
Let's end on that note. Well, listen, we will be back next Tuesday. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe and add some reviews. Mention Ben Golliver's status as a juror. So we'll recap the weekend on Tuesday and enjoy the chaos until then. I'll talk to you soon, Ben.
Guilty.
Peace.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.